So there's going to be a pop quiz in a minute. Why don't we pass this along?
Okay, let me help you. I can pass that one here.
Okay.
One each person?
Yes.
Okay.
You don't need to look at them right now. So I thought I'll start with a little puzzle that you guys can try to answer first. Okay? So it's kind of bad to have too many people having birthday on the same day, right? In the school, if it's your birthday, you should be special, right? So we are trying to see how few people should be in the KMS such that there will never be two people having the same birthday. That's what we are trying to find out. So instead, keep quiet. Instead, what I'm going to ask you is the following question. What is the minimum number of kids that should be in the entire school, Kyrian Middle School, such that you can be certain, you are sure, that at least two of them would have the same birthday? That's the question that you want to think about now. What should be the number of kids in KMS such that you are sure that there would be at least two people who have the same birthday? Yes, sir. What's your name?
Krish.
Okay. 366. What do you think?
367. Possible have a birthday on February 29th.
February 29th. Would you agree with that? Do other people agree that you should have 367 people so that you can be sure that there'll be at least two people with the same birthday? Yeah?
No, because there could be like four or five people with the same birthday.
All I want is the following. Yes, that's a very good question. But the point that I'm interested in is I just want at least two people to have the same birthday. That's all. So it is actually possible that KMS is one of those silly schools where everybody has the same birthday. They were all born on November 1st. That's okay. Okay. All I care is that at least two of them have the same birthday. That's what I'm looking for. So you are indeed right. The two guys who answered are indeed correct. You need 367 students in the school so that we can be certain, for sure, right, that at least two of them have the same birthday. And notice that you don't quite know that everybody has one, you know, everybody's birthday falls on a different day except one birthday which two people share. It could be that everybody is on November 1st, okay? So in fact, this idea here is called pigeonhole principle, and it's actually a nice, cute idea. If you have, let's say, a bookshelf like that, right? How many shelves are there in the bookshelf? 1, 2, 3, 4, 24, right? All I'm asking is how many books must you have such that you must put at least two books in at least one of the shelves, 25 books, okay? So this is easy, this is easy. Now I want to ask you a different question. I'm not interested in certainty of two people having the same birthday. I want to reduce the possibility that people have birthdays together. Okay? So my question is, how many kids do you think should be going to KMS such that there is at least 50% or more probability, the word probability, okay, that two of them might share a birthday? Remember that if you have 367, the probability that at least two of them will share a birthday is how much? What's the probability there? 100 or 1.0. Right? Okay. What I want is how many kids should be there in KMS such that the probability that at least two of them have the same birthday is 50% or more. Now, first things first, do you think the number of students required would be lower or higher?
Lower.
Than 367. Lower, right? Mm-hmm. My question is to you the following. How many do you think should be there? 200 people in the school such that it will be 50% or more? Are 150? 100, 50, 20. What do you guys think? 200. Somebody thinks 200, somebody thinks 150. 150 is like half of 367 approximately. Not really, but sort of. There was somebody else who had a raised hand.
I remember, I can't exactly tell you why, but I remember driving my dad, and my dad thought the question was interesting because he had like 27 kids.
That's an interesting thing. So, your name? run and think that you might actually get 50% with just 27 kids in the class. So, no, 27 kids in the school. If you have just 27 kids in the school, he thinks that it may be possible, at least his dad thinks, it may be possible to have 50% or more probability that two kids will have the same birthday. Okay, let's think about that in a minute. Would that be surprising if that is true? Would that be surprising? Yes, no?
Yes.
Yes, right? Because you needed 367 people for 1.0 probability. You would have thought maybe something like half for 50% probability. Okay? But apparently, it may be 27. We'll see in a minute. The next question is, what would be the number of people needed to get 99% probability? I don't need 100%. I just need 99% probability. Yes, sir?
366
is what I would think, right? So what do you think?
366.
Okay. Keep that in mind. So you all think this may, some of you at least may think the answer for this is 366. The answer for this is sort of more like 150, except Ronan's dad who thinks it's 27, right? Let's see what happens. Here is an actual graph that I drew. Okay, in fact, I copied it from Wikipedia. And here is the number of students going to KMS. Here is the probability that at least two of them will have the same birthday. Where is it graph becoming around 50%? 23.
Wow.
Okay? That's pretty funny. And let's look at another different thing. Where is it becoming close to 99%? Where is the first place where it's becoming close to 99%? Yes?
About 60.
About 60. And we all thought it'll be 366. Right? So if there are 60 or more kids in the school, there is 99% chance that at least two of them will have the same birthday. This is surprising, right? So this is actually called birthday paradox. If you go to a big party, okay, and there are about 20 people in that party, the chances are more, so the odds are high that at least two people will have the same birthday. And if there are about 60 people in the party, you can be almost certain, 99%, that they're going to have the same birthday. Now, this is all fun, you know. I showed you a graph. I made it up. You have no clue whether I made it right or wrong, okay? The question is, from the probabilities that you already learned in the class for the last week or so, or last 2 weeks or so, could you have computed these numbers yourself? You have your calculator. Could you have computed these numbers? Okay? Let's look at that. Here is what you could do if you just have 5 kids in KMS. I'll tell you how to do it for 5 kids in KMS, and I'll tell you how to do the calculation. And then when you go home, you can calculate it. You don't need to actually calculate right now.
Go ahead and listen.
Yeah, but you can go home, and you know, this stuff is there in the printout I gave you. You can go home and calculate it for 20, for example. Okay. Let's look at the way the reasoning works. Okay, if you have 5 kids in KMS, just 5 kids, and you want to make sure that none of them have the same, I mean, no two of them have the same birthday, okay? What I will first try to do is compute the probability that every one of these 5 kids have different birthdays. The probability that every one of these 5 kids have different birthdays. Do people understand what I'm saying? Do you guys see what I'm saying? Okay, so if I have 5 kids, right, the first kid can have any birthday out of 366 days. Okay, the second kid gets to only have 365 days possible after 366 days. So 1 times 365 by 366. For the third kid, it's 364 by 366. For the fourth kid, it's 363 by 366. For the fifth kid, it's 363 by 366. Is it too hard to do? It's a pain to actually put this in the calculator, but you can write this if you have 27 kids. Okay? If you multiply this whole thing, you'll get a number. That number would be, as the number of kids increase, what do you think is going to happen to this number? Is it going to increase or reduce? What? reduce or increase?
Well, the number of days possible.
No, just look at this, just this expression, okay? So this number, 365 by 366, is it greater or less than 1? Less than 1. If you take any number and multiply it by a number less than 1, what happens to the result? Becomes smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. As the number of kids increase, this piece becomes smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. Okay? And in fact, if you have 5 kids, so this is the probability that all of them have with different birthdays. Ronan? Oh, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. You're right. 365, 364, 363, this should be 362. So very quickly change it to 362 in your printer. That's a very good point. That's a good point. Thanks. Okay. So then the probability P that at least 2 of them would have the same birthday would be 1 minus this number. That's the way you compute it. So if you compute this, 1 minus this number, for 5 people around somewhere here, that's the number you will get. Okay? And if you actually compute it for 23, you will get a number greater than 50%. And if you compute it for 60 or more, you will get a number greater than 99%. So there is actually no paradox here. You're just using simple probabilities. Okay? And part of the reason you think actually you need 366 kids to have 99% is because you're missing a different point, which is how many pairs of kids can you pick from 366 kids? I know that you guys did this as a homework 2 days back. If you have 366 kids, how many pairs of kids can you pick? If I want 2 pairs, I want to get 2 kids each, how many different 2 kids can I get from 366 kids? What? No. No. So remember, if you have 3 kids in the class, how many pairs of kids can you pick from 3 kids in a class? Yes? 6. For 3 kids, it becomes 6 because it's a number of combinations. Remember, you found out it's n factorial divided by n minus r factorial times r factorial. For 366 kids, the number of combinations is going to be humongous. It's actually going to be, how much is it going to be? Can you tell me? Is it like a... That's okay. It's going to be, for 2, it's going to be 366 times 365 divided by 2. That's what is going to be the number of pairs that you will get. And since there are so many pairs, it's very likely that some of them are going to have these are the number of pairs in 366 kids that you can get. And since there are so many pairs of kids, and if any pair of them have the same birthday, you got it. Okay? So the number of pairs of kids, even in a small number of kids going to the class, is going to be very high. In fact, actually, you can, if you think about it a little bit, you'll realize that if there are n kids going to a class, there'll be n square, approximately n square pairs of kids. Okay? That's part of the reason why we think that the birthday should be different for everybody, and yet, when we go to a party, we'll find that lots and lots of people, there is at least 2 people who have the same birthday, because there are many, many pairs. Is there a question? Yes. That's interesting, right? So what we are saying is it's not surprising anymore. One of the things that you need to learn about probability is if you don't learn about probability, you think everything is magic. Okay? Wow, it's magic. Must be God did it. Must be my dad did it. Nobody did it. It's just obvious. If you just do the numbers, it's not surprising at all that in a room full of 60 people, there's a very high chance that 2 people have the same birthday. Okay. Now, I'm sure you got sick and tired of birthdays, right? We're going to do something completely different, okay? Are there any questions before I go off to the next piece, which is really the fun thing that we're going to do? Okay. What we're going to do, of course, is to see a video. Can you see the moving? Yeah. So how many people know what this is? Yes, sir. These are cars. This was in October of 2005. A bunch of cars without drivers drove around roads, mountain roads in Nevada. Okay, you'll actually see. So these are cars. There was a red car that went by, right? That's called Highlander. And there is this blue car. This one is called Stanley. Yes, sir.
Oh, I watched now on video.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not going to show you an hour long video. Okay. So there is Stanley there, and so the nice thing about these cars is they're driving themselves. There's nobody in there, okay? Okay, and so that is a real, this is an area near Prim, Nevada, and there's an actual road with people driving there. And they are, if they knew that there are cars without drivers right below them, I'm sure they would be very unhappy, right? Because the cars might come and hit them. So here, there are all these cars going along, right? And let's look at a little minute. I mean, actually, the total video is 5 minutes, but I'll just show you 2 minutes. In a minute, there'll be a couple of interesting things that I want you to see. So this is a big one. This is called Terramax. And there are a bunch, yeah, it's, the name was Terramax, okay? And it was another one of the competitors, too. And none of them had people inside. They're just driving, okay? Furthermore, by the way, you cannot be remote controlling it. You know, all of you have these remote controlled cars, right? Mm-hmm. That's cheating. You don't get to remote control. If you remote control, you're using your brain. Here, the cars are using their own brains. They're real robots. They are autonomous. That means they are using their own brains to figure out how to go. And here is a map of the area in the mountains that they are going through. Okay? And you'll see in a minute the actual mountainous terrain. And so, for example, in this case, one car got stuck and another car sort of turned around, passed it by and went off. You'll see in a minute. Okay? So this one actually was Highlander. Everybody believed that Highlander was going to win the race. So there's a little guy, Stanley, and Stanley was passing, and this is the inner eye of Stanley, what the robot was actually seeing. What it saw was, it saw some really, you know, quirky things, and it's trying to go like this. It saw some green thing. That was the car that it was trying to avoid. And it tried to make a way out of it and then kept going. The important thing to note is the robots don't see the world the way you and I see. They're basically seeing, you know, so this is actually, this is the robot that passed that other car by. That's called Stanley. Okay? And notice where it's going. I mean, you know, none of you kids, are any of you kids driving these days already? Do you have driver's licenses?
No.
You're like too young, my God. Anyway, so you should, even if you get a driver's license, you know, you don't want to drive on these kinds of roads. You'll fall off.
No.
Right? I am feeling worried about driving there. And look at this little car. It's nicely going around. And there's nobody. And I'm sure the guys who made this car, who put a lot of money, they're kind of nail-biting. They're thinking, I hope my car won't fall off. You know, I can't do a thing. You know, sort of like what your parents do when they let you go off to school and say, I hope they know how to cross the road. Okay? They are doing that, except now for the scientists, the guys who made these cars, it's their kids. And they don't, you don't get to keep holding on to them. You have to let them go by. Okay? So that's the, you know, we can see more of it a little later, but I will stop there. And let's think about a couple of things. So in this particular case, it was about 150-mile road over mountains. And that little guy, that Stanley guy that we saw, it actually wound up winning the race. Okay? And it took 6 hours, and it won the race. What's more interesting is a robot, which was not remote-controlled, was able to go on roads. Now, what do you think will be harder, first of all, than driving on mountain roads? Yes, sir.
Driving on ice roads.
Okay, driving on ice roads is harder than driving on mountain roads. What else? Yes. Yes, sir.
Driving on no roads at all?
Driving on no roads. How do you drive on no roads? They were driving on kind of no roads, you know, what is something that's missing here? To some extent, actually, the driving there is easy, I would say. Are there other cars coming in front of you? Are there little kids trying to cross the road to catch their balls? When I am driving, kids are always falling in front of my car because they have a ball out there, right? So in fact, the driving in front of my home is more dangerous than driving in Nevada, in some sense. So the next challenge that DARPA is running, which is going to be held this November, is called DARPA Urban Challenge, where cars would actually be driving on normal roads. Okay, would you like to be on the oncoming traffic when the robot cars are driving?
No.
No? You like robots, right?
Yeah.
But not if you're going to be killed, right? Okay, so the speed of the cars in DARPA Grand Challenge was 30 miles per hour. That was the maximum. But they had to reduce speed at any point of time. Okay, so on the average, it wound up around 20 miles per hour. Okay, so first thing is that, in fact, driving on mountain roads might be easier than driving on normal roads. And we haven't yet figured that out. But second thing that I want to do today is to think of what are some things that are important in making these kinds of robots. Yes?
Sensors,
important, yes?
Knowing where you are.
What?
Knowing where you are.
Know where you are, will, that is kind of interesting point. Yes, sir?
Timing
of what?
Like when to turn.
When to turn, etc. Okay. You guys are talking similar, by the way. For example, he wants to know where he is, where the robot is, and then you are saying, once you know where you are, you should know when to turn. If you don't know where you are, it doesn't matter how to turn. Okay, yes, sir.
Microchip?
What is microchip?
For the cars to, like, know where they are.
Okay. So, now here is an interesting thing. If I am sending you out, and, you know, if your parents are sending you out to go to school, can they put a little microchip into your head and then keep telling you, what's your name, by the way?
Timmy.
Timmy, you are right now at this place. Timmy, right now you're at this place. Can they tell you?
No.
If they do it, you'll be going like this. Okay, mom, like that. That's not good, okay? So in a sense, you have to figure out where you are. You have to figure out where you are, right? You know, your mom and dad can't keep telling you. Similarly, the guys who made these robots can't tell the robots where they actually are. Okay? So it is important to know where you are. Now, what else? Anything that you learned in the school that would be useful? Yes?
Well,
what?
The robot has to be able to completely see what's around it. And
okay. Okay. By the way, till what time do we have?
Just so that I. Until 9:25.
Okay. Good. Fine. Okay. So here is the deal: the guy whose robot won the race, wrote a book on robotics. Okay, and he called that book. What did he call that book? Can you imagine that? You thought the only thing useful about probabilities is to figure out, you know, given a jar full of red pencils, blue pencils, and green pencils, what's the probability that you can get red pencils out, right? And yet, in fact, one of the most important things that the robots need to do, everything else we talked about is important too. They need to have sensors, they need to have good motors, they need to know where they are, etc. But one of the most important things is they need to reason with probabilities, okay? What I'm going to do today, and that's my evil plan. I was going to show you a video so that you'll kind of listen to me, and then make you realize that, in fact, probabilities are useful for robotics. Okay? So that's what I'm going to try and do. Questions? Okay. So, I'm sorry. So what I'm going to do is make you guys feel like robots, okay? I want you to feel like robots. And so you are in the mall. I took you to a new mall. Unfortunately, many of you guys know this mall. This is the Arizona Mills Mall. But suppose you're coming here first time and you don't know how the mall is, right? Where everything is. So I drop you by helicopter into somewhere in the middle of the mall. Okay? I made a little hole on the top of the mall, threw you in. You didn't know exactly where you fell. You didn't know exactly where you fell. Okay? But, so, like, Timmy, you need to figure out where you are in the mall. And what I'm trying to do, of course, because you came as kids, you want to go to IMAX theater. Okay? In this mall. You need to walk towards the IMAX theater. You got thrown into the mall and you need to walk towards the IMAX theater. Okay? The only question is this. Okay, that's, so first thing is you need to have signs. If not, you'll just keep loitering around. And of course, one day they might, you know, you might reach IMAX theater. But you need to know where you are. To help you where you are, I will give you a map. I would have given you this printed map that I'll put you in your pocket. Is that going to be helpful?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Is it completely helpful? As soon as you see the mall, you'll say, that's exactly where I am. Would you say that?
No.
No. What do you need to do?
Look for landmarks.
Look for landmarks. So you need to look at the map. Okay. So you need to look at the map. And you need to see the map, you need to look around you and say, okay, in front of me there is a JCPenney here, there is a Burger King here, let me look at the map where the JCPenney and Burger King are, and okay, based on that, oh, I must be kind of here. Since I'm here, and the IMAX theater, can anybody read where IMAX theater is? See, you don't even need to read, you guys know where it is, right? So all I need to then do is go from here, but it's a map. It's a small map. Okay?
JCPenney's humongous.
Yeah. Where is JCPenney's? Here. Okay. Okay. So the deal is the following. The deal is to figure out where you are in the mall, you needed to first look around, figure out some of the stores, look into the map, see where those stores are, and tell yourself, oh my God, this is where I am now. Okay? So, now I'll make your life slightly more interesting. First of all, it's already interesting. Remember that until you looked around and figured out what your stores are and then looked into the map, you didn't know where you are. I'll make your life more interesting. Suppose you have bad eyesight and you lost your glasses. And for those of you who have good eyes, I put very bad glasses on your eyes. So you can't see a thing. Okay, I'm just very mean today. Okay. So you can't see well. You can't see well. And so when you think you're seeing a JCPenney, it actually could be Sears. Maybe JCPenney, but maybe Sears. Okay. Now, is it as easy to find out where you are?
No. Yes. Yes.
You'll only know probabilities. You will think, maybe I am here or here. And then I sort of have to make my way, do more things to figure out where I actually am. Yes?
Don't robots do something called blind finding?
We are going to talk about that. Yes?
Follow your nose to
the food court. Okay, so then I'll put a little stopper on your nose.
Oh.
Okay. Okay, then what if, and furthermore, suppose you somehow just approximately figured out where you are. I'll tell you why I'm making this impossible. Okay, so approximately where you are, and then you start walking. By the time you figured out where you are, you're so hungry you can't walk. You're falling off. Or you are like a little kid and you try to walk this side and you kind of go farther in different directions. Then, even if you figured out where you are, after a few steps, you no longer are going in the direction that you wanted to go. Instead of going to IMAX, you will start making a move towards the food court. This other kid, it doesn't matter for him where IMAX is. He's just going to go to the food court. Right? Yes, sir.
Who?
Yeah. Okay.
If you stepped over the trouble, like a pretzel.
So the So the point that I want you to think of is this robot. The robots that you see, they are like kids who lost their glasses, who can't smell well. I mean, they don't smell bad, but they can't smell well, right? They can't, and they can't walk straight. And they still want, they don't. Depending on how much money you put into your robot, you can get a bad motor, which instead of going in the forward direction, sometimes goes on other direction. Okay? So the biggest issue is a robot needs to know where it is before it can do anything. And even that is very hard because it doesn't have proper sensing. And then once it knows where it needs to start walking towards the right place, and there it can make mistakes because it doesn't walk properly. It keeps falling down. Or it may go in, it can either go, either the robot can fall down or it can go in the wrong direction because the motors are not good. What?
If the robot falls down, how's it going to get
back? That's true. Okay. Here actually is a real robot. Here is a real robot, and I'll start the movie in a minute, but let me explain to you what I'm trying to show you. Okay. What we are showing is, this is what the robot, it's a schematic diagram in the sense, you don't show the actual robot, but here is where the robot is. Okay? And it's trying to go into, let's say, a room here, because there is some coffee that it needs to pick and then bring it to me. It's my servant robot.
Okay?
I mean, robots are supposed to help you around, right? So now the point is, this is, since it's a kind of a my servant robot, I didn't put too much money in getting it really good sensors, and it doesn't have very good motors. And so the way it tries to figure out, where it is it basically sends laser pulses, different directions. And when the laser pulse hits the wall and it comes back, using the amount of time it took to hit the wall and come back, it computes the distance between it and the wall in that direction. And using that, it tries to figure out in its own head where it is. Okay? Yes, sir?
What if it goes through a human?
Thankfully, there are no humans here. But humans are like walls too, right? So depending on the sonar or laser, they may not pass through humans. If it's X-ray, it'll pass through humans, and we are in trouble. Okay, so what we're going to do is figure out, see how the robot actually finds out where it is. And, do you see all these red dots? You know what those red dots are?
People.
No. Those are all the red dots where the robot thinks it currently is.
Wow.
It's like totally lost. Right? You know where it is. You are telling robot, you are here. And if Timmy's mom can tell the robot directly, robot, you are here, but she's not allowed to tell. So you all are looking around. In fact, once I start the video, you will be looking around this robot. It's such a silly robot. You know where it is, but it doesn't know where it is. And furthermore, watch the red dots as the video starts. Okay? Just a second. Watch the red dots where the video starts. As the robot figures out where it is, the red dots become fewer, and they will be in only some places. And if the red dot is only in one place, and thankfully if that is the robot, then robot knows where it is. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And if not, as it is walking around, it's trying to figure out where it is, and it is improving its sensing of where actually it's likely to be. In the beginning, it could be everywhere in this big corridor. By the way, this can be a corridor, right, with rooms, and then there's a big corridor, there are rooms around it, and the problems with corridors, and you might have noticed this, how many of you, when you first came to the school, the beginning of the semester, started going into the wrong rooms for your classes?
Oh.
Nobody went into the wrong room at all?
What?
So, but when you first came to KMS, right, you may have made a mistake and gone into another room because they all look similar. So that's, yes, sir.
Wait, so the green dot is the robot, right?
The green dot is the robot, and when I start the video, the robot will start moving.
The blue lines are where he senses?
The blue lines are the lasers it is sending. Okay? So the problem, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. Lasers sometimes actually behave badly. Okay? This is what I said, right? I mean, you have bad eyesight, and robots have perennially bad eyesight. So it will start seeing walls where there are no walls, and sometimes it might even see no walls when there are walls. And so then it makes a lot of fun jokes because it'll fall into the wall, fall back, and we all get to laugh, right? Yes, sir.
If it has no idea where it is and it's all over the place, why isn't it like inside the walls? Because it doesn't know that the walls are there.
Because they run into.
Because they can't go in the walls.
It cannot go through walls.
It could. It's the red dots that be on the walls.
No, but that's a good point. By the way, your name,
Garrett.
What's your name? Garrett. Garrett is saying something very smart. You know why? Suppose you went to your friend's home and slept. I mean, you did a slumber party, right? In the middle of the night, you woke up to go to the bathroom. In your home, you know exactly where your bathroom is. You get up from the bed, just start walking towards the bathroom. In your new friend's home, you don't know where you are. And there is not enough light. And you are trying to figure out where the bathroom is. The easiest thing to do is make your way to a wall and follow the wall. It's not a bad idea at all. In fact, it is a very smart idea to improve your certainty. So his point is that if the robot at least hit itself towards a wall, then it knows that it is at some wall. So then the red dots will only be along the walls, which will still be all over the place, but at least it doesn't any longer think it's in the middle of the room. Right? So you now notice that increasing your knowledge might not just mean I know exactly where I am, but increasing the knowledge means you know at least where you are not. If you can remove all the implausible places, then the places left must be the ones you are at. Okay? Let's look at the video because, and then I'll take more questions as the video goes on. Okay, so the robot is moving. As it is moving, did you see what's happening to the red dots? It's becoming smaller and smaller, fewer and fewer. Now, let me stop it here. Notice now, by this time, the robot, are there any red dots inside the room?
No.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
That's sort of like Garrett's point. It sort of now knows it must be somewhere in the corridor. Again, this robot is doing exactly the thing you were doing when you had the map of the mall, but you didn't know where you were in the mall, and you had bad glasses. So it thinks, since it's basically able to, based on the things that it has done till now, it knows that it must be somewhere in the corridor, but it's no longer sure exactly where in the corridor. That's why it thinks it's either here, or here, or here, or here. Now also, the bigger the red blob is, the more probability the robot thinks it is at that place. The smaller the red blob, the less probability. So the two places where the robot thinks it is in currently is here, where it actually is, and here, where it actually isn't. But it doesn't know that. Okay. Now, how many people can see that these two points actually are sort of symmetric? Do you know symmetries? They are symmetric because this point, if you look at around this point and look at around this point, the walls are approximately the same. This is why the poor robot is confused. It's not brain dead. It just has bad glasses. Right? Okay? Now, as it moves further, now it's actually going into that room. Right? As it is going into the room, notice that it thinks it's going into the other room. It's going into the other room, it thinks. But that too is reasonable, right? Because if it thought it was either here or here, and if it went in this direction, right, it is either in this room or in this room. That makes sense, right? So robots are completely confused. They think, okay, I'm here or here, here or here. But as they walk around and get more sensing, reduce the uncertainty about where they actually are. So I hope you agree that this robot is a happier robot than the one we started with, where it thought it could be pretty much anywhere in the world, anywhere in the corridor, right? So this is a much better, happier robot. Now, if you go forward further, what happens to this robot is, as soon as it realizes that there is a thing there, what happened now? It now knows where it is. Why? Because according to the, so when it comes up to this point, it laser hits this part. According to the map, there's only one room among these two which has that funny thing in the middle. So it now knows that it must be in this room, not the other room. And at this point, once it realizes where it is, it can start walking very fast. Okay? Until, you know, and do more things. Yes, question.
Are there usually two floors in the mall?
Yes, but we'll think about it. Much worrisome. Yes.
How did he know that it has to be that room if there's the funny thing in the middle?
Because it does have the map, just like you had the map. So that's the interesting point. You can give robots the maps, but you can't continuously tell them where they are. Now, in fact, an even harder problem, a much harder problem than the one that I'm showing you, is a robot which doesn't even know the map. So when I throw you into the middle of, let's say, Superstition's wilderness, you know, the mountain, and I don't even give you a map. Of course, your parents are going to yell at me, but, right? But the thing that's going to happen is you have to both make a mental map and follow the area. So in fact, remember in all the stories when like a princess or like a little prince get lost in the jungle in the forest, they will start throwing some stuff behind them. Right? What are they trying to do? Graham crackers, of course, the wolves will eat them up. That's always the problem. But in general, throwing these things on the road is a way where they're making the map themselves as they're walking around. In our robot's case, at least the map is there. Okay? Okay. So that's like the big point that I want you to understand, that in fact, robots can use their sensing and their probabilities to figure out where they are. Yes, sir.
Why does it still think it's in the parking lot?
Where is the parking lot? Oh, here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good question. It is a good question. But in fact, it is possible. However, notice that it does think there's a much higher probability that it's here because there's a really big red blob.
Maybe in the parking lot, it's like a big hover.
Something. Possibly. But here's the interesting thing. The very fact that you thought about it, you're thinking like the robot now. Okay? And you need to think like the robot to make the robot. Okay? And don't make fun of him. He's actually being nice in terms of... Okay. Okay, now a few slides without cute pictures, but make you think and do some numbers. Okay? So I have a much simpler room this time. I have a very simple room. Okay? I have a west room and an east room. And there, between the two rooms, I have doors. But these doors are one of these curtains kind of things. So the robot actually, if it hits into them, it can just pass through them. There is like a divider between the rooms, but it's a soft divider to make things simple. Possibly. Yeah, it's like the ones in the restaurants, for example. Okay. Now, the robot, in the beginning, doesn't know whether it is in the west room or the east room. It does not know. Just like our old robot, this little robot, the cute guy, doesn't know where he is, whether he or she is. Do you think it's a he or a she?
A he.
He? It's an it. Okay.
All right.
So the it is actually in the middle of the two rooms, and it is either here or here. Okay. And it thinks actually that it's completely unsure as to where it is. So what do you think should be the probability that we should assign that it's here versus here, west versus east? What? 50%. Okay? So my first question is, what do you think is robot's probabilities that it's in this room versus this room? So if you are putting those red dots for your robot, you will put a 50% size dot here, red dot here, a 50% size dot here. Okay? Agreed? Now my question is this. My robot has motors, and I splurged. I got good motors for my robot. Okay? It is blind as a bat. It doesn't know where it is still. Okay? But it has good motors, and it can tell its motors go east or go west. And if it says go east, it'll go east. And if it says go west, it'll go west. And whenever it hits a hard surface, like a wall, this wall, this wall, it will stay in that place. It's, you know, you've seen these kinds of robots, right? When they hit a wall, they try to stop or try to come back. I made my robot in such a way that when it goes and hits the wall, it stays there until I tell it to do something else. Okay. So if my robot can go either east or west, right, and it really thinks it's 0.5 here, 0.5 here, my question, and think now, okay, this is no longer fun. Actually, you have to think. My question is there something, and remember the robot is blind as a bat, okay, is there something that robot can do such that after doing it, it knows exactly where it is, even without seeing? And I'm going to ask somebody who hasn't yet risen their hand. You.
Well, it could tell the motor to go east.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You're almost close, but in fact, so here is the idea. Suppose I ask it to do the action go east, right? If in fact the robot is here, it will keep going east until it hits this wall, in which case it's now in the east room. If it was in the east room, it will go east, hit the wall, and it's still in the east room. So irrespective of where it was before it went east, after it did east, it definitely is in the east room. How many of you have read this little story by, I think, the nursery rhyme by Sandra Boynton, where animals, some of them were sleeping, some of them were playing in the night, some of them were snoring, etc., until the elephant snores very big. And now you know for sure what the animals are doing, but none of them are sleeping anymore. After the snore, before the snore, you don't know whether which one is sleeping, which one is not sleeping, but after the snore, you know everybody is awake, right? And similarly, before doing east action, the robot didn't know whether it was in west or east, but after the east action, it knows it will be in the east room. Okay? And another way of thinking about it, suppose I can't see. I don't know whether there is anything on this table or not. Is there something I can do to make sure that there's nothing on the table?
Yeah.
Everything falls off and it will be clean. It's true that this kid won't like me, but I got it clean, right? So I'm sure after that action that my table is clean. Okay. So that's my simple blind robot. And we have a couple more things and then we are done. Now, the blind motor previously had perfect motors. Now, I have a blind motor with bad motors. Blind robot with bad motors. I mean, how bad can things get? Okay. And the thing is, when you ask it to go east, it goes east 80% of the time. 10% of the time, it goes north. 10% of the time, it goes south. I didn't pay enough money for my motors. Okay, so I got cheap motors. So anytime I say go east, it goes 80% of the time east, 10% of the time north, 10% of the time south. This, by the way, is the way real robots are. Their motors don't work completely. Or even if their motors work, the roads are bad. And so where they think they are going versus where they actually go is different. Okay? So in this case, my question is, if I still do the go east action, will I be sure that I'm in the east room?
No.
But would I be more sure I am on the east room than I was before?
Yeah.
How do you think I can solve this problem using number math stuff that you know? Probabilities. Okay? So here is what I'll do. In the beginning, the robot thinks it's here with 0.5 probability, here with 0.5 probability. Okay? And then it goes, it says go east. And when it says go east, right, it will go east with 0.8 probability and go north or south with 0.1 probability each. And if it was in this room, if it did north or south, it will stay in this room. Right? Whereas if it is in this room, if it does north or south, it will still be in the east room. Yes?
Well, there's a divider and it can fill the divider.
I know, but we said the divider is in there. In the sense the divider, it just passes through the divider. But that's a good point. So what I want you to see is you can actually compute these probabilities. If you do go east action from the east room, and you were in the east room to begin with, after the go east, with 0.5 probability, you will still stay in the east room. And if you were in the west room with 0.5 times 0.8, what is 0.5 times 0.8? 0.4. With 0.4 probability, you go east. With 0.1 probability, you will stay here. So after the go east action, okay, you would have 0.9 probability that you are in the east room and 0.1 probability that you are in the west room. So doing the action did help you. You are not completely certain, but you are more sure as to where you are. Just like our red dot robot, by after doing actions, it knew more as to where it likely is. Okay, I know that you have a lot of questions, but let me do one more slide and then I'll take lots of questions. Yes?
When you say go east and there's a 0.8 probability that it'll go east and 0.1 to go north and south, wouldn't there be like a 0.00001 chance that it'll go west?
I said my action does. So you don't need to worry about that. Okay, these are the only things I said my action does. Okay? Now let me show you. So this is the meanest thing I'll do to my robot. Okay, not yet. Okay, so I have these bad actions, but I also got my robot a camera. But the camera works well. Okay, and in the east room I put a big circle, in the west room I put a big hexagon. And the camera can see the circle and say it's a circle. And it sees a hexagon, it says it's a hexagon. So if the robot is in some room, it opens the camera and the camera comes back and says hexagon, then the robot knows for sure that it is in what room?
West
room. Yes?
What if it's in the west room and 14?
No, let's assume that the camera only looks at, make it easy, okay, I understand your point, but let's assume that it only looks at the nearby walls, and it's like the walls are full of hexagons in one room and walls are full of circles in another room. Okay? Now, in this case, would it know after making the east action which room it actually is?
Yeah.
Because it will do east action, it thinks it's 0.9 probability in the east room, 0.1 in the west room, it's still not completely sure, then it opens its camera, checks. If it says circle, it is really in the east room with 1.0 probability. If it's not saying circle, then it's probably not in the east room, it's in the west room with 1.0 probability. So if you have good eyes, even if you have bad legs, if you have good eyes, you can go places. Now I'll make it really bad and say the robot has bad legs and bad eyes.
Oh, God.
That's the normal robot that we saw. Okay? And so this robot, when it sees the hexagon, when it's in the west room, it actually sees a hexagon with 0.9 probability, but it also hallucinates sometimes and starts seeing circles. Because it's a bad camera. With 0.1 probability, it starts seeing circles, even though it's in the west room. Or similarly, it will start seeing hexagons sometimes also in the east room. In this case, what happens is the sensing will not make the robot certain as to which room it is in, but it increases its certainty. Okay? So this is my last slide, and we are anyway running out of time. My last slide basically is, originally robot, before we started this blind robot story, it did not know which room it was in. It thought it was here with 0.5 probability, here with 0.5 probability. Then it did a go east action with bad motors, And then it knew it was here with 0.1 probability and here with 0.9 probability. And you didn't take my word for it. You actually did the multiplications to get that. So you can actually do this. And then if in fact it has a camera and the camera is perfect, and if the camera has told it that it is seeing a circle, I'm sorry, if the camera says you're seeing a hexagon, then irrespective of what the robot thought before the camera told anything, after the camera said hexagon, it knows that it must be in the west room. Whereas if the camera is not perfect, if the robot really believes it's likely to be in the east room and the camera says hexagon, then you start saying, yeah, maybe the camera is not very good. So I will still think I'm very likely to be in the east room. Little less likely than 0.9, but not going to be zero suddenly, because I don't believe my eyes. I don't believe my camera. So actually, let me show this. So let me show this, and then I'll show you the cute doggy robot, and you go out. Okay? So robots use probabilities a lot. They use probabilities to figure out where they are. They represent where they are. Probabilities about the motors going in the right direction, whether they're going in the right direction or not. Probabilities of their cameras and laser finders detecting things right. Okay? And then they use the actions and sensing to actually improve their sense of where they actually are. Okay? And let me show you this. Since you went through this whole thing, you should at least see this. Here is a little cute doggy robot trying to figure out where it is. Okay? And it's a Sony Aibo. It's doing RoboSoccer demonstrations. And notice what's happening. It's trying to figure out the ball, pick the ball, orange ball, and pushing it into the thing. And now it's lost. Right? How did it get lost? Because it doesn't have a good camera. And it didn't know what it did to the ball. And then finally it went in. Right? I'm sorry. So the one thing that I want to show you here is this particular thing. Right? In the initial time when RoboSoccer was being held, it used to be the case that these robots would think anything that is orange looking is the ball. And so there were videos out there on the YouTube where robots are all going towards this umpire who was wearing a orange t-shirt and trying to hit him. Right? And you thought robots are smart. Okay? They had bad eyesight, but they do fine. By the way, I'll put this talk up on the web, and there is actually a nice little video here. There's another video there too. None of them work here on your computer. I'll put them up. But these two videos, one of them, if it is working, will show humanoid robots, robots which actually look like people, autonomously trying to play soccer. Okay? And I put pictures of it, but it's a video, and it's very nice to see. And the other one is not humanoid, but very fast-moving wheeled robots playing soccer. And they all do this kind of probabilities to figure out where they are and how to do it. Okay? So that's it. We're going to stop. It's 9:25. And in the back of the slides, there is a place where my email address is there. If you have questions, I know there are like 10 questions or 15 questions I missed. If you have questions, send me email. I'll be happy to respond to you. Okay? And then there is also a URL which has all the videos that you can click when you go home and actually watch the fun robot soccer stuff, apart from all the other ones. Okay? There are a couple more sheets here, actually, great, if anybody needs it. And thank you guys for listening to me.
Thank you
so much. Thank you. Oh, okay, so if you guys have questions, apparently I can take questions.
By the poster board and then the